Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Good morning again. I'm really bad about getting a blurb out in the newsletter. So I recognize this whole room has no idea what this talk is going to be about. I kind of don't either. But I have a request this morning. It's not often I make requests from the High Shiki, but I have a request this morning. And that request is to please be gentle with me, to be gentle with each other. For many, right now, times are hard and stressful, full of grief and sorrow and fear. I've had a particularly grief-filled week, especially the end of last week, and it's still percolating. It's still passing through. And for all of us, this isn't new. Hard times, stress, grief, sorrow, fear, these are not new things. These sorts of things have been happening for as long as life has existed on Earth. We respond to our environment. That's one of the basic definitions of life, something that responds to its environment. And the Buddha was fantastic about offering teachings on how to deal with this, how to cope with this, how to meet this. Dukkha, dissatisfactoriness, the dissatisfaction that comes with all component things, all things that come together and abide and come apart again. If anything, right now, I feel like a comet that has broken up on its approach to the sun. And it looks like a solid thing, but it's really in pieces, all traveling together, bound by inertia, bound by karma. And I'm wondering, those here in the room, those on Zoom, have you ever felt like that? Like something that looks like a thing and is all in pieces, just traveling together. So if anything, this talk is really about that, about practicing when things feel overwhelming or broken or too much. And there can be moments of sublime beauty in times like this, moments of startling clarity and connection. We talk about practice. We talk about our Zen practice. We talk about the three marks of anicca, anatta, and dukkha. I'd just like to note, I got a list right. I usually forget one thing. Anicca, anatta, and dukkha, these three marks of existence, these three marks shared by all things, this impermanence that comes with a sense of a self that is impermanent, that changes, with everything changing. And oftentimes, as we work with difficulty, as we work with grief, as we work with stress, wanting things to be different than they are, there is a sense of wanting to find balance. We're wanting to find a way for things to get back to the way they were. Does this also sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Thank you, Annie. The funny thing is, things don't go back. Things unfold, things develop. But returning to a prior state, it's not something I've ever encountered. In our search for balance, this balance is not a static thing. It is not an individual concrete state. It is in itself dynamic. Equanimity is dynamic. As we find our sense of equanimity in the midst of just the ever-changing world, that too is in motion. And karma doesn't stop. Karma continues to unfold. And one of my favorite illusions is rest. My favorite illusion is, if only I could rest, if only I could get some time, if only I could put down my tasks, if only there is some imagined state in which and then I want to hold on to it. And so there's looking for this thing that doesn't exist other than as a concept in the mind. And there's this hoping for a state that can't be found except in an individual slice of a moment. And as soon as I recognize, ooh, this is a nice nap, it's gone. It's gone. And we can look at that and we can think, oh, wow, Buddhism's kind of hard. Like, where's the reward? If there's not even rest, what can I look forward to? There can be so much beauty in the midst of all of this difficulty. There can be so much joy in the midst of grief and sorrow. Zen teaches us to let go, to release, to stop resisting what is. Zen teaches us, practice teaches us, to let the feelings in. It teaches us that control is an illusion. We want things to be a particular way. And that part of this sublime experience is acceptance and a deep surrender to things as they are. Even if we don't like them, there can be release in that surrender. And I know every person in this room has their own version, their own story of stress and discomfort and grief and fear. We all have them. What I'm carrying today has to do with just a lot of death in my work. I work as a healthcare chaplain. It's just this last week has been death after death after death after death. And I have a great capacity. And sometimes that capacity can be reached. So I'm holding those deaths. I'm holding those stories. I'm holding those moments of intense intimacy with great change and great mystery, which is no worse or no better than the grief and the difficulty and the sorrow held by others in this room, because you can't compare suffering. I remember Kyogen telling me that, you can't compare suffering. And he did his little finger shake. Can't compare suffering. So we talk a lot about hard things in Zen. We talk a lot about working with suffering and difficulty. And our Zen tradition is full of stories. Our scriptures and our sutras are full of stories. And for a tradition that values sitting in silence, we talk a lot. And our stories don't simply talk about awakening or how a revered teacher achieved enlightenment. But they also talk about the conditions in which those teachers practiced. There is story after story of illness, grief, death, hardship. There are stories of people with great privilege and ease that are still difficult to bear. I'm thinking of the Denkaroku written by Keizan. How many ancestors in chapter after chapter were dealing with significant illness? I believe there's a series of them in our Indian ancestors who were all dealing with leprosy. That's a significant illness. But the hope and the promise of Buddhism It's not for suffering to stop. It's not for suffering to turn into pleasure. It's not for what is hard to bear to turn into lightness. The hope and promise of Buddhism, at least as I have found it, you may be different, is that these burdens become bearable. That we create relationship with these difficulties that allow them to be, and allow them to be as part of us, as part of our experience. We stop resisting them. We let them in. I spent a long time working with that phrase, non-opposition to experience, before I had a sense of what it felt like. What it felt like to say yes to, oh, this is what's happening. Because when we're in non-opposition to things as they are, liberation is also present. And that liberation is our birthright. Ease can be found, but not as something separate. Ease in the midst of everything, ease in the midst of not rest, ease in the midst of too much death, ease in the midst of, oof, whatever it happens to be. Practice is a both and, it's not an either or. And sometimes these experiences of ease can be a flash of recognition. They can be the light hitting a flower just right. They can be that last I love you said on a deathbed. When we pay attention, when we're present, when we're mindful, when we attune to our senses, it is so much easier to find these little slivers in the midst of everything that is. When we can get out of our heads and the thinking mind that tries to evaluate and judge. I go through so much of my day trying to evaluate my experience. What is happening? What do I need to do next? Is this okay? Is this not okay? When we can stop and put down that constant evaluation, that sweetness arises. Some of these things that can arise can be moments of great levity in the midst of sadness. It's said that the Buddha Shakyamuni made rules for monastics when the need arose. And I have to wonder, did he ever get tired? Did he ever get exasperated? Did he ever say, oh, come on, you guys. Really? You did what? No, we don't do that. New rule. New rule. But we need that. We need that humor. We need that connection. We need that interaction to bear things that can be hard to bear. But this is simply life. And it's just a little sliver of a life because these lives continue. In these deaths I was with, each one was different. Each person has their own process. Each family has their own dynamic. And there is something exquisitely beautiful at seeing both the individuality and the commonality. And how do we work with this? And it was so funny. As I was coming here this morning, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to get through this talk without crying. Because that grief was so heavy. Sorry, guys, on the microphone. But what helped was offering sanzen. Being able to sit in that seat and to hear people come with their questions, with their challenges, with their, what do I do? And I was like, oh yeah, we're the same. And I may have had advice to offer. I may have had suggestions to make. I may have had invitations to try something different. But there still was that sense of like, oh yeah, we're the same. Just a human being trying to negotiate human existence, human life. And if anything has epitomized this Zen practice to me, it is how to be a human being in a human life. There are so many people trying to figure out what it is to be a human being in a human life. I don't know how to do this. Someone asked me, I don't know how to die. How do I do this? I don't remember. But what I said was, if you can say yes to it, it'll make it easier. And that's something that we can apply to each moment in our life. If we can say yes to it, it makes it easier. Now, there's a way to be unskillful with a yes, of being too willing to say yes when really the appropriate things to say no or hold a boundary. So I just want to be clear, I'm not talking about saying yes to unhealthy situations. But I'm saying, if you can say yes to the small things that trip you up, if you can cultivate a habit of saying yes to, like, having to wait in line to get gas, come on, you don't need a full tank, just go. Or finding out your favorite thing at the grocery store is out. The vanilla silk soy milk creamer, why is it gone again? I'll have to try something else. It'll be worse, whatever. I can say yes to it. And it wasn't that bad. We can say yes to these little things that we make big. So that, not only so that, I mean, we can enjoy the moments in the moments. But creating that habit of leaning into a challenge, of leaning into our feelings. How many people here don't always like to feel their feelings? Okay. Once again, not alone. Happy to hear it. When we learn how to do that and learn that our feelings don't break us, even if we feel broken, if we can say yes to life experiences in a way that acknowledges, wow, this is hard. This is the edge of my practice. And it's doable. There's that yes and, that both and. When the really, really big things come, having that habit of saying, yes, I can do this. Yes, I can lean into this. Yes, it's going to be sad. Yes, I'm going to feel pain. Yes, this is the next thing in front of me. It makes a difference. It makes a difference. We can say yes to our experiences and let them transform us. Because we don't have a set self. All of those little comet pieces are just traveling together in their orbit around the sun. But letting ourselves be transformed by those we encounter, by those we spend time with our hearts open, it's a beautiful way to honor those interactions. Each of those people I spent time with on Friday and Saturday have changed me in some way I can't name it right now, other than the feelings I'm feeling. But they added and transformed this little collective of pieces that is traveling along. Maybe there's a little places that gets eroded, maybe little places things get built up, maybe a few little pieces of gravel get knocked together and reshaped. We can say yes to allowing ourselves to be changed and transformed, not only by this practice, by the world in which we encounter. Right now, I think many people are engaging the world with a mm-mm. Or mm-mm. Doesn't make the world go away. So how we notice the suffering, notice what we can touch, what we can change, what we can contribute to, and to be able to speak up when we're the ones that need that care, that consideration, that honoring, that respect. When we know, when we can say, I'm hurting right now, and I just need to be, I need it to be seen. That's where I am today. I just need it to be seen. I don't need to be fixed, changed, whatever. But I need to be able to say, I've had a hard week. I've had a hard last couple of days, and it's going to take a few days for me to get over it. To know that as we come together in community, that we can say these things to each other. It's been rough. And not feel like we have to put on our Zen face of everything is fine as it is and nothing bothers me. Because yes, in the absolute sense, everything is fine as it is, and also I can be bothered by things. That's okay. We have times of being hurt and we have times of being strong for others. We have times of celebration and we have times of grief. I am so happy when we think of Buddhist cosmology in the six realms. I'm so happy to be in the human realm. To be able to experience all the experiences. To be able to connect with all the people I meet. To be in this room with these people, which is all of you, engaging in this practice. Because I can guarantee you, we're not all believing the same things. We're not all seeing the world the same way. My little individual comet that's circling the sun and is full of pieces can also be, like the metaphor can be shifted to the Sangha. We're all pieces of a comet circling the sun, interacting with each other. I don't know where I'm going with that shift in metaphor, so just bear with me. I guess if there's any point to what I'm saying, to what I'm sharing, it is this. And it is a point that often comes up in my talks. I recognize it, and I'm going to say it again. Let yourself feel. Let yourself inhabit your life. And do not be afraid to share it with others. Because it is through that connection that we make meaning, that we make sense of our experiences, that we have the opportunity to give and receive support. And in those times when there is great mystery, great questions, great confusion, we have each other. And that too makes a difference. That's my talk for today.
We'll now have a period of questions and comments. If you're in the room, please raise your hand and I'll bring the microphone to you. Please say your name before you speak. If you are on Zoom, you may type your name into the chat box to be unmuted, or you may also type your question or comment into the chat box and Kaylin will read it for you.
Hi, my name is Dan. Thank you for your talk. Hi. I really related to what you said, everything you said, and it really made me feel something really deep and authentic at the same time that I was not aware of even until you said that. So it's not really a question. It's just more of a comment and an appreciation for your talk. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your perspective. Appreciate it.
Joshin.
Hi, Reju.
I'm Reju. Would you say a little bit more about rest as illusion? Because I hurt my back this week, and it doesn't feel like an illusion that laying on my back with my feet on the couch is different than standing in the kitchen and carrying stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The illusion I'm speaking of is the idea of rest as something out there that we can get that will be the magic fix for all of our hurts. Mm. And it is slightly different from the rest that comes when muscles are relaxed or when we're caring for our body. But sometimes we can take that idea of the sensation of rest in the body and make it into a bigger thing that we get quite greedy about, especially for people who tend to orient towards tasks and doing and identify with obligation. Rest becomes obligation, or rather the desire for relief from obligation. Because you remember Kyogen's armchair story?
No.
Okay. He had a story. I'm a terrible storyteller.
Oh, I just remembered it.
Yes. So you get, he's looking for the perfect armchair or the perfect chair, recliner, whatever. And he finally gets it and he sits in it and it's just. And then the question is, what happens if he stays for 4 hours? Maybe he gets a little uncomfortable. He stays for a day. And it's probably not so good for the body. If he stays in an armchair for weeks on end, it's going to be quite painful. And so that moment of rest, that moment of release, when grasped after, can become quite detrimental. So knowing the amount of skillful rest is different than engaging, like letting greed engage in, this is a thing I'm going to have, and it will stay that way. So that's the illusion part. That's the delusion part.
That makes sense. Thank you.
This is Genko. I found myself during your talk thinking about some of those moments of sweetness. Mm-hmm. Friday night and yesterday during the day, I encountered 4 women mm-hmm. who all in their own ways have come a long ways since I first started working with them. Very different people with very different ways of doing things. And yet what I did last night was I sat down and started writing poems about each of them mm-hmm. and just celebrating them mm-hmm. because watching their transformation, and I'm talking big time transformation over mm-hmm. time mm-hmm. has been so rewarding to me. And at the end of it, what I end up saying is, this is why I do this work.
Yeah.
So the flip side maybe to what you're talking about is seeing that, knowing that a lot of that has come because I've been really open to experiencing what they're talking about and their suffering, and being able to say, yeah, and what about this, and what about this, and all of that. I mean, it's real easy for me to then take all the credit, which of course is ridiculous because it's not been me. But the fact that I could be there seeing it, being with it, not opposing it, actually sometimes verifying, you're right to feel rebellious under those circumstances. You're right to be angry about that. It's all of that. It's all a part of it. And sometimes I get this confluence of, you know, all these people sort of going, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah. Those moments of sweetness cannot be manufactured.
No.
But they can be recognized and witnessed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm Dai Guy. So you made a distinction between saying yes and saying no to unhealthy situation. But in my experience, that saying no to an unhealthy situation arises out of saying yes, right? It's just a form of saying yes. I don't know if you want to put a finer point on that, or you have a response.
I think the finer point is knowing what is needed. And knowing what is needed to honor the self. It is a yes to self. It may be a no to other things. It can be part of why I explain that the way I did is because for some of us, it can be easy to be conditioned to saying yes as an act of violence against the self. And that in and of itself is not healthy. And so being able to say yes to those things that are nurturing and helps one thrive, which may be recognizing that there needs to be a no, that there needs to be a change. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I just thought for the sake of the room, that's a good distinction. Yeah, I want to share, I want to confess something to you.
What?
When we first encountered each other today, I could feel, obviously, a lot of heaviness.
Mm-hmm.
And for a short period of time, my reaction to it was one of impatience,
mm-hmm.
not compassion. It took a little while for that to go away, you know, and I know what it is, right? And I just wanted to say that to you. All right.
Thank you. And right before we came in for the Dharma talk, you made a little joke and gave me a little hug, and that was exactly what I needed in that moment.
Morning, Joshin.
Hi, Miyui.
This is Miyui. I feel like a comet too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to acknowledge that and to you and sorry about your suffering. And you know, taking a nap sometimes really good too.
It is.
So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. There's hands here. I have no idea what's happening on Zoom.
Hi, my name is Jane, and thank you for your talk, Joshin. It meant a lot. And you reminded me that earlier this week I'd been reminded to stay with a situation that I'd been running away from. So we're hearing it again. And staying with something is causing me to realize that I don't have a lot of words for different feelings. Like, I don't know what feelings are called.
Mm-hmm.
I know anger and I know frustration, but mm-hmm. there's so much subtlety too.
Yeah.
So I found a list of emotions that I got from a previous workshop. Like, emotions that you display when your needs are being met and emotions when your needs are not being met. And so this is really cool because mm-hmm. it's just another slice of the onion to peel away and explore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, it all seems so relevant.
I'm glad you're exploring the various feelings and how to communicate them, because being able to name an experience helps you, like, it helps see the experience as part of a whole instead of the overwhelming whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's part of me.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to do, is like to not form violence against myself by saying yes to things that I feel aren't good for me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm glad to hear it. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Joshin. This is Ruka. So the last few weeks, I have been at my mom's in Pennsylvania. She entered into hospice the day after I arrived at a hospice care center. There was a lot of sweetness with her. I'm wearing her bracelet. And I think how hard it was.
Yeah.
She suffered.
Mm.
And I had the role. I stayed with her in her room. I had the role of asking caregivers to give her pain and anxiety medication. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And she suffered. And thing could have prepared me for it. She wanted to go. So I was on that journey with her. I wanted her to go the way she wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
After she passed Wednesday, 1:30 in the morning, I was with her. She wasn't suffering anymore. And part of me, what surprised me for a few days after, is like, I just felt hollow. Like, I journaled in the airport coming back, like, I feel like a shell.
Yeah.
And it kind of scared me a little bit, like, what's going on? And am I making this about myself? Mm. You know? Mm-hmm. And I tried to name it, and it was like, is this a trauma response from seeing her suffer, staying up with her nights while she was suffering? So I tried to just stay with that empty feeling. Maybe it's trauma, I don't know. And then it's really interesting. I vividly felt that Friday, my flight's back. And then yesterday, being home and being with friends and a friend's, going to a friend's birthday party, and I feel like I'm back. To something's changed, and back to being more myself and being more at home. Mm-hmm. So I guess if you have anything to say about, like, I was a trauma response, questioning if it was the self. And
in my experience, it sounds like grief. And it sounds like the grief that comes, the acute grief that comes after a death, especially if you've been there for a while, if you've been there through the death process. So often there is that sense of hollowness after. There is a sense of, some of that is the loss, some of it is the sense of the self as, I'm a person without a mother anymore. There's a shift in identity there. There's an exhaustion that comes after providing care for someone for a number of days. Like, all of that sounds quite common. And if there's worries about that, I would talk it over with a therapist or a counselor, but it doesn't sound, this is me with my chaplain hat on, I've shifted from priest to chaplain, but it doesn't sound different from things that I have heard from other people who have been in attendance at their parents' day. And grief will come and go in its own way, in its own time, and it will surprise you. And then there are times when you will expect it and it won't be there.
Thank you. That's helpful. I feel some freedom.
Yeah.
The unknown of grief.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. We've got time for one or two more.
Hi, my name is Julia. It's my perception that in this society in particular, there's a lot of shame around expressing emotion, and that having feelings or like big feelings is something that other people have to put up with and is like an imposition. And I see that as kind of on a spectrum along with the acceptance you're talking about of like the different creamer or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
How do you tell the difference between like, I can accept this and be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to accept this and I can feel my feelings.
Mm-hmm. I think both are true. That both can exist at the same time. And I think that a lot of the work we do in practice, as we get to know ourselves, as we get to know our habits of body, speech, and mind, gives us the capacity to do that discerning, to do that sense of like, oh, that feels tight. I know what this is, and I know, okay. Can I be patient? Can I lean into this? And there are other ways where it's like, ooh, there's that thing. And actually, I need help with this. And that doing that internal discernment comes from experience. So gaining that sense of just noticing time and again as things unfold. How do I respond? How am I responding? How am I responding? And becoming familiar with this is bearable and this is not.
Thank you.
Yeah. Did that help at all? It was sort of a non-answer.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of a situation where my feelings are justified and I'm expressing them and it's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not received.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't I I honestly think I can't do much about that, except for just like honor how I'm feeling and accept that it's not being received.
Yeah.
So I think that's in alignment with what I was thinking. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. As soon as you said my feelings are justified, my first thought was like, well, your feelings are your feelings. Like, the justification is extra. It's an extra layer. And the point that I've been talking at is just that sense of whatever you're feeling is okay to feel. It's the feelings, it's how you respond after that is the different layer, or how you respond to people who are telling you whether they're accepting your feelings or not. That's their problem. That's their problem. Yeah. All right. Shall we call it good for now?
We have one last comment on Zoom. Just a comment.
Okay.
So this is Carly. I want to express my gratitude for this talk and for the option to be on Zoom. I'm carrying some heavy things in this community, this practice, and all you have shared today, help create space within me to say yes to them.
That's beautiful. Thank you for that comment.